Welcome to Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, an award-winning, listener-supported, open-source grassroots community radio station broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield. Please note that these presentations are provided as a public service for general information purposes only and are not intended to be legal opinions, legal advice, or complete discussions of any legal issues. Remember, every individual's factual situation is different, and you should seek independent legal advice from an attorney familiar with the laws of your state or locality regarding specific information. The name of this show is Life and Debt, and it is a weekly half-hour educational show looking at all types of issues related to debt as it influences your life. This show provides practical, general knowledge about what to look for regarding debt, what are its traps and pitfalls, and what to do to be an educated debtor. Please get some notebook, paper, and a pen so you can take notes during the show. I always start the show by looking at some debt-related news and facts for the week. Over the last several weeks, I have been looking at myths that have been disseminated by the media regarding bankruptcy. Since the inception of the new law in 2005, October 17th, 2005. Just to refresh your memory, if you've been listening, I want to remind you that the credit card industry spent approximately $90 million in lobbying fees to get the new law enacted. And over the course of the last 4 years, what bankruptcy attorneys have discovered is that, for the most part, what the law does to consumers is create more expense to file bankruptcy rather than prevent any abuses that the law was theoretically supposed to cover. For example, the cost to file bankruptcy has gone up measurably in terms of court fees, up to $299 for the filing fee in a Chapter 7, for example. And now consumers need to take a credit counseling course as a ticket into bankruptcy, which costs somewhere between $35 and $50, and a debtor education or financial management course once a consumer is in bankruptcy, again, which costs between $35 and $50. These are added costs, which for someone in a bankruptcy posture can be significant. There is a lot more paperwork that needs to be done and a lot more due diligence pressure on bankruptcy attorneys to file these cases. The long and the short of it over these years, however, is that the attorneys have discovered, particularly the National Association of Consumer Bankruptcy Attorneys, with over 4,000 members, that the government may be looking for statistics that support the law and its changes, but those changes really do not in any substantial way show that there has been abuse under the bankruptcy system, nor have the number of filings decreased, as we can see in the last year. In light of that, now a lot of people feel that you just can't afford to file bankruptcy anymore, which generally is another myth promoted by the media. While it is true that the cost of bankruptcy has for most law firms gone up in terms of added paperwork and time on each case, and as I also just mentioned, it is true that the actual out-of-pocket cost for clients has increased, most attorneys have responded by giving very generous payment plans for bankruptcy, in which clients have substantial amount of time to make their payment of costs and fees, particularly in a Chapter 7 type of bankruptcy, a straight liquidation bankruptcy, while in a Chapter 13, it is often possible to get some of the payments for fees and costs paid through the plan if it is not realistic for the client to get those fees paid in advance of filing the Chapter 13 case. And a Chapter 13 is a debt repayment plan over 3 to 5 years. One very important point in considering the concept that you can't afford to file bankruptcy, it is a rule of thumb that unsecured type debt, which would be discharged in a bankruptcy, for example, credit card monthly payments, will no longer be paid once the decision and commitment to filing bankruptcy is made. So monthly payments on these unsecured debts are now freed up to focus on filing the bankruptcy and paying fees, etc. So that myth of not being able to afford to file a bankruptcy is untrue. And for most people who are straining financially and being harassed by debt collectors, the fresh start relief is a huge relief on all fronts in their life, not only financially, but emotionally and ultimately physically, with health issues that do come from immense stress with finances. I, of course, have spoken about the relentless debt collecting process and the stress that this creates, but I want to share a little story regarding the mindlessness of some debt collection processes and companies. A woman died this past January, and a major credit card company billed her for February and March for their annual service charges on her credit card and added late fees and interest on the monthly charge. The balance had been $0 when she died, but now was somewhere around $60. A family member received the statement and made a call to the credit card company. The family member said, "I'm calling to tell you she died back in January." The credit card customer service person said the account was never closed and late fees and charges still apply. The family member said, "Maybe you should turn it over to collections." In response, the credit card company said that since it is 2 months past due, it has already been turned over. The family member said, "So what will they do when they find out she is dead?" The credit card customer service person said, "Well, they will either report her account to frauds division or report her to the credit bureau, maybe both." The family member was quite surprised by this statement, so said off the cuff, "Do you think God will be mad at her?" Customer service replied, "Excuse me?" The family member replied back, "Did you get what I was telling you, the part about being dead?" The customer service person said, "Sir, you'll have to speak to my supervisor." So the supervisor got on the phone, and the family member said, "I'm calling to tell you she died back in January with a $0 balance." The supervisor said, "Sir, the account was never closed and late fees and charges still apply." The family member responded, "You mean you want to collect from her estate?" With a stammer in his voice, the supervisor asked, "Are you her lawyer?" The family member said, "No, I'm her great nephew," and gave the lawyer information. The supervisor said, "Could you fax us a certificate of death?" Which the family member did while still on the phone. In response, the supervisor said, "Our system just isn't set up for death. I don't know what more I can do to help." The family member responded, "Well, if you figure it out, great. If not, you could just keep billing her. She won't care." Then the supervisor says, "Well, the late fees and charges do still apply and will continue to amass." Frustrated with the whole conversation, the family member said, "Would you like her new billing address?" The supervisor said, "Yes, that might help." With one last go-around, the family member said, "Odessa Memorial Cemetery, Highway 129, plot number 69. The supervisor exclaimed, "Sir, that's a cemetery." And with his final retort, the family member said, "Sir, what do you do with dead people on your planet?" If you're just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP, 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. Now let's continue on with the second segment of the show. I've been talking about the human side of debt and money troubles, but before I start, I'd like to give the credit to Professor Elizabeth Warren from Harvard and her daughter Amelia Warren Tyagi, two of America's leading champions for debtors, because the thoughts, ideas, and examples used in these programs are directly from or based on their work, theories, and books. And I highly recommend two of their books, All Your Worth and The Two Income Trap. Also, you can always go back to get a review of all of my shows from www.kruufm.com. In the archives, look under Life and Debt to see all the shows that I've done, which are just filled with tons of knowledge about debt and how to deal with it and how to never get into it, but if you are, how to get out of it. I had just been talking about dealing with a credit card company regarding a bill that was charged after the person had died. And this leads me into the concept I was talking about last week in the human side of money troubles, is that unfortunately, you should never trust a bill collector. If your financial problems are getting really, really bad, you may find yourself, as I said, at the center of a lot of attention. You'll be getting all kinds of phone calls and letters. Sometimes they even visit your home. They call your work. They call your neighbors. They want to talk to your children. And these are, frankly, the people you want to speak to the least amount of just about everybody you know. Bill collectors do have a lot of different approaches. Some can be very friendly and sympathetic, and some can be quite the opposite and scary and simply following company policies, regardless of what you tell them or try to get them to understand. No matter what tactic they use, their goal is to get money out of you. They want to get paid, period. And of course, you may be able to make deals with them if you have to, but don't forget that they are not on your side, so don't ever take their advice. When you're late on your bills, the bill collectors can be quite nasty. They'll call you late at night, on the weekends, sometimes even on holidays. They call you at work. They try to embarrass you by pestering your coworkers or your extended family. They'll threaten to garnish your wages, freeze your checking accounts, show up with the sheriff at your house, or may even threaten to have you arrested. But regardless of what they say or do, keep calm. And when there are threats involved, as I said, ask for a written letter outlining what action the creditor plans to take. If the bill collector won't write the threat down, then he or she is probably just blowing smoke, and he knows that if it's put in writing, the company could get sued. So get it in writing. And this is well worth repeating, that many of the practices that bill collectors use to intimidate people are outlawed by the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, and that you have a right to defend yourself. They're not allowed to call before 8 a.m. or after 9 p.m. They're not allowed to contact you at work if you tell them your employer disapproves. They're not allowed to contact you if you are legally represented and you've told them that. But most bill collectors know that people don't know their rights, and many people who owe money are too ashamed to ask for help. But of course, you can do better. And I gave you the www.ftc.gov URL to help read up on your rights, or the hotline at 877-FTC-HELP. Both of these prevent you from becoming another victim. Again, it's www.ftc.gov for the online contact, and to call the hotline at 877-FTC-HELP. And then the last point I made, which is really important, is never let your kids talk to debt collectors. And educate the kids not to talk to them if they answer the phone when they are at home. If it is a bill collector, they should not speak with them. You don't want your kids threatened, and you don't want your kids told things like you're going to go to jail, which is in reality untrue, just because you haven't paid a debt. In sum, protect your kids and protect yourself by getting the facts. Another point that I discussed last week was staying away from credit counselors in the human side of money troubles. They can sound very friendly, but most are slick operators who want to frankly get every last penny out of you until there's nothing left to gain. The industry is unregulated, so it's smart to stay away from it. Even some of the nonprofit counselors have been exposed as shams. So safety first, just stay away from this kind of thing unless you're absolutely positive from other reputable source references. And I suggest personal references that the credit counselor is okay. And the final point I made last week is don't hide in any kind of shame because of your money problems. Financial troubles come the way of many people nowadays in the middle and lower class, and because of the current state of the economy, we can see that they're also touching people who were formerly millionaires and even billionaires to the point of huge embarrassment and shame in their minds. People do get overcome with these kinds of feelings and they find themselves isolated. We live in a society where people speak publicly about just everything. For example, alcoholism, drug addiction, teen pregnancy, an inability to get pregnant, yet financial troubles remain their last great taboo. Almost everyone refuses to talk about overdue bills and repo men. This means that we're going to feel like we're all alone, like we're the only one in the world facing these kinds of hard times. The fact, however, is that you are not alone. One in seven families is in serious financial trouble. That's absolutely right. One in seven American families is in trouble. A person is more likely to file for bankruptcy in America than to file for divorce. In other words, people just like you who are having financial difficulty are everywhere you go, in every strata of society, in every religion, in every race. There are plenty of hardworking people, decent people, that have found themselves in exactly the same spot that you find yourself. So you should never hide in shame. The correct response is to find someone you can trust, a family member, your best friend, your spiritual guide, priest, minister, rabbi, and talk about the circumstances. Financial trouble can be a giant weight on your shoulders, but don't try to carry it alone. If you're just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. The next thing I'd like to talk about in the human side of money troubles is the bankruptcy option. I'd like to start with a little story from Elizabeth Warren and Amelia Tiagi. When they told Emily and Travis that the couple needed to file for bankruptcy, there was dead silence in the room. Travis looked as if someone had just slapped him, and for an instant it looked like he might try to hit back. Emily looked a little lost, and it was several minutes before she seemed to notice that she needed to blot her eyes. We had gone over the numbers in painful detail, and we all knew that Emily and Travis couldn't even cover the interest on their debts, much less begin to pay down the loans. The conclusion was obvious, but it still stung to hear it. Travis eventually stopped clenching and unclenching his fists, and Emily finally reached for a tissue. After a few hours of talking, they were still a little shaky. Emily said, "I was raised right to go to church and pay my bills. But good Lord, it's like I'm choking to death every single day. I can't even drive to work without worrying. How am I going to pay for the gas for my car? Maybe bankruptcy will give us a little air. Maybe we can do it." So that's a little vignette from Professor Warren and her daughter, a true story which reflects the millions of stories that come into bankruptcy attorneys' offices every year. This year, it's predicted that 1.5 million American families will file bankruptcy. And the point that was made in the story was that maybe we will get a little air. The purpose of bankruptcy is for a fresh start. that is what bankruptcy is all about. It's hope for the future. It is unburdening oneself and one's family with the often huge burdens from the past. It may sound like the end of the line, and it certainly can be a gut-wrenching experience for many people, one we hope you never have to face. But if you do, you are not going to be alone, as I said. If you break it down statistically, every 15 seconds, someone makes the decision to walk into bankruptcy court with the current volume of filings. In fact, more people file for bankruptcy each year than graduate from college. If you think you don't know anyone who has gone bankrupt, you better think again, because bankruptcy is more common than cancer, and there are some very famous and rich people who have filed it, some who became rich again afterwards, and untold numbers of people around you who have had this experience and have moved ahead with their lives, most in a very positive fashion. If your financial situation gets really bad, filing for bankruptcy may be your best option. Professor Warren, for example, has taught thousands of students bankruptcy law, co-authored one of the nation's leading textbooks on bankruptcy. She's testified before Congress and the President about the intricacies of the bankruptcy code and has spent more than 20 years of teaching and writing about bankruptcy. She says that by and large, quote, knowledge about bankruptcy is limited to a small number of highly sophisticated lawyers and bankers. Meanwhile, the people who most need to understand bankruptcy, ordinary people who are in deep financial trouble, are left to grope in the dark. Her books, like All Your Worth, are there for people who are at the end of their financial rope to help them make the smartest possible decision, which is why I highly recommend her books. So the first thing to think about is what bankruptcy can and can't do for you. Bankruptcy, in essence, is a one-time get-out-of-jail-free card like in Monopoly that lets you erase many of your debts. The bankruptcy code is designed to achieve two goals. First, when you are at a point where there is no hope of repaying all your debts in a timely way, the bankruptcy process is designed to treat your creditors fairly, or at least as fairly as possible. Bankruptcy prevents a particularly aggressive bill collector from pushing aside the other people you owe money to. The judge makes sure that when you don't have enough money to pay all your debts in full, then the back payments to your landlord or your dentist get the same treatment as your old bills from Citibank or Ford Motor Company, for example. Second, as I said before, bankruptcy is designed to give you a fresh start. The founding fathers of the United States, very well aware of the debtors' prisons in England and the problems with ruining lives and families and the stress and hardship that people suffered, often because of circumstances entirely out of their control, inserted a bankruptcy provision into the Constitution. In fact, they put it in before they added the Bill of Rights. They wanted Americans to have an alternative to debtors' prisons and, frankly, a lifetime of debt. Bankruptcy is based on the principle of second chances, a second chance at getting back on your feet financially by wiping out many, if not for most people, almost all of your debt. This is a good thing, so people can move ahead with their lives and give themselves the chance to have their creative energies flowing again. When you file for bankruptcy, the courts take legal control over all your assets, the bank accounts, the house, the car, everything right down to the smallest household item that you have. This may sound daunting, but because of the way the law is constructed and the legal exemptions that are allowed for most of us who are in these circumstances of having to file bankruptcy, much, if not everything, is protected under the exemption laws and that which is not protected is dealt with in a very reasonable fashion. As I mentioned earlier, there are two general kinds of bankruptcies that consumers file these days, Chapter 7 and Chapter 13. There are rules about how often one can file, which we will discuss a little bit later, but generally, one Chapter 7 to another Chapter 7 is now 8 years. It used to be 7 years, which is actually based on biblical passages, but now under the new law, it's 8 years. The intermixture between a 7 and a 13, or a 13 and a 7, that has different time rules, which are less than 8 years. This week, I'd like to talk a little bit first about a Chapter 7. About 70% of all people who are in financial trouble would file a Chapter 7 bankruptcy, what is sometimes called a straight bankruptcy. This is what is sometimes defined as the clear the slate bankruptcy. In different states, due to the different exemption laws that apply in that state, even though this is a federal law, everything of value is considered as an asset. And as I mentioned, in a state like Iowa, much of it is protected, whereas in some other states, this may not be the case. So you would need to speak to an attorney who knew the exemption laws that apply in the bankruptcy in that state. But the important point is that most of the debts will be erased completely. It really is important to speak with an expert regarding your particular circumstances because the exemption laws are quite powerful and deal with common, usual ways that people amass their items. And much of that is normally protected. However, unusual things need to be looked at carefully to see how the bankruptcy would impact on that item. In almost all states, you can usually keep all your clothes, your furniture, and your household goods, your retirement fund, a car, assuming that it doesn't have a huge amount of equity in it. And in Iowa, most often you can keep your house too if you're current on the mortgage payment for a Chapter 7. Again, in other states, one would have to ask an expert to look at your valuables to see how the state and federal law applies to your particulars. The bottom line, and it is often a surprise, that for most people filing bankruptcy in a Chapter 7, almost everything is protected. And in the Chapter 7 situation, it's the practical reality that by the time one is about to hit the bankruptcy courts, you may not have very many assets worth selling anyway. That's usually the case. Most bankruptcy people don't have much cash or stocks or bonds or anything else of huge value. And as I said, the house does have some special protections. If you did have something worth selling, the judge will appoint a trustee to oversee the sale of your stuff and distribute any cash from the liquidation to your creditors. The creditors get a piece of what's there, if anything, but after that process is done, the liquidation took place, or there is nothing there, then the creditors who are unsecured get the debt wiped out. This is called a discharge. I'll continue with this Chapter 7 analysis next week. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you have been listening to Life in Debt, your debt education program. If you have any questions or comments, call the station at 641-209-1083, or you can email me at lifeanddebt@gmail.com. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. May you enjoy and have a healthy and prosperous debt manageable life.